This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright. And on the program today, we have Robin Kelly of the Dinux Group. We've had Robin on the program before. The Dinux Group is a multi-generational family business with holdings all over Canada. But primarily today, we're going to focus in on Robin's portion of that, both in BC and Alberta. And one reason why we wanted to have Robin come back on the program and join us today was multifamily. Multifamily has been an asset class that I wouldn't say is challenged because the vacancy rates were so low. Even with rent control, we saw the lease rates of most things go up continuously. And when they would backfill units, take massive jumps up, that hasn't exactly continued to happen. We dive into why that is. We talk about immigration. We talk about international students. We talk about all these things that might have impact on the multifamily market. And Robin also gives us some insight too on some other asset classes that they're in. We talk a little bit about Alberta, which obviously finds its way into every commercial real estate conversation. It feels like now when you're talking to someone about acquiring in BC, we have to talk about Edmonton or Calgary. So we talk a little bit about what they're doing over there and get his thoughts on the market. So without further ado, let's get to our interview today with Robin Kelly of the Dinux Group. Enjoy, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Mark your calendar.
That's right, Matt, because Atlin's grand opening is happening Saturday, September 13th from 12 to 5 p.m. at Zentera Sales Gallery in South Surrey at 2411 160th Street.
Join us for refreshments, food, and live entertainment. And Adam, the Beat 94.5 is going to be live on location.
Atlin is Zentera's newest condo community coming to West Clayton and features studio to three-bedroom homes, starting from just $325,000 and only a 10-minute walk to the new SkyTrain station.
Buy now and get over $50,000 in inclusions. Air conditioning, vinyl flooring upgrade, built-in closet organizers, Samsung appliances with a gas range, washer, dryer, storage locker, and more.
Atlin offers amazing amenities with over 30,000 square feet of outdoor space, including three children's playgrounds, plus a rooftop patio, a gym, co-working space, party room, games room, and even an on-site daycare with priority access for residents.
Just 10% down secures your home with move-in in 2028.
Come down to the presentation center on Saturday, September 13th to tour the sales gallery and show home to see what all the hype is about with your chance to secure your own home at Atlin.
Visit atlincondos.ca for more details. That's atlincondos.ca for more details.
All right, we're here today with Robin Kelly of the Dinux Group. Robin, how you doing?
Pretty good. Not too bad. How are you?
Good, thanks. Well, Robin, thank you so much for joining us again. We've had you on the program before, but today we're excited to kind of dive in to pick your brain a little bit on the multifamily side and what's happened there, because it is one topic that we get quite a bit of interest in from listeners there. But before we get into that, Robin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into commercial real estate, Dinux Group, and the evolution of it as well?
I'll do the short version, I guess, is on before the next.
Sure.
Basically, it's been around for about 50 years. Family businesses, my wife's family originally had, they started it and we'd expanded. And then in 2009, keeping it brief, we did a butterfly transaction that was planned among family members, the next generation. So everyone took a handful of buildings. You know, you went from basically a decent sized company to something that you had to work a lot to grow out of once we divided up. And my wife and I, we happened to get a few four apartment buildings essentially. And from there, we, you know, took our little piece and, you know, we expanded into industrial, into Alberta a bit. We started building a lot more home, multifamily on the island. And yeah, everyone, we still work together under the Genex Group, but we're all technically separate entities. So I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, we're essentially, we share property management. We share the group name. And at first we definitely kept, I remember it was actually weird. It was myself, my father-in-law at the time. He was like, oh, keep your own companies. And I remember like, no, we have to call ourselves one group because, you know, the lenders, the suppliers, everyone's going to beat us up as soon as they find over 1/7.
Yeah, absolutely.
1/7 of the larger group, they're just going to, we don't care about you, right?
Yeah.
So now I think like a lot of us were growing to about the same size that we were when we originally divided back, like a lot of us individually.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it would be neat if you had the power to be together, you could still make an option to do large projects. But it's also, it allows you to be a bit more kind of entrepreneurial and learn from the other people in the group. They're also doing different things than you.
Understandable. So most of your bread and butter is the Vancouver Island market, I guess, for the most part. I know you guys have expanded out there, and we'll talk about Alberta and your thoughts there, because that creeps into every BC real estate conversation, it feels like, in commercial lately. One reason why I want to have you on here is the multifamily asset class has gone through a lot of changes. When I say gone through a lot of changes, there's been a lot of things like government intervention with regards to immigration, international students, all of this stuff has all kind of affected the multifamily side of the commercial real estate market, both in vacancies, probably prices and things we're getting. And when we wanted to reach out to someone to kind of pick their brain and get in more, you jumped to the top of my head here with all of your assets there. Can you maybe just for the listener's sake, give us a little bit of a breakdown of the multifamily holdings that you guys have under your portfolio there, and then we'll kind of dive in to get your thoughts of what's happened and where things are going.
Yeah, so ourselves, I'll probably speak in the broader sense for the whole family.
Sure, absolutely.
We do share. It's interesting because we're building a project in Bridgend, Calgary on the multifamily side. And then we have a bunch on the island, as you mentioned, and also in Montreal, we still have an asset. Family as a whole, there's a couple members that have a lot more in Montreal, so we're in contact with them to see what's happening in that market. One of the partners expanded a lot more into multifamily in Calgary, so he's there. We were in Edmonton for a while. And a lot of us are on Vancouver Island and at different stages, like a building. So we have newer buildings, older buildings, a bit of the whole gamut. And it's interesting because you're right. It's changed really fast and it's always been a numbers game. And I remember with my wife, everyone was like, this could never end. This could never end. This could never end. You look at it and you're like, well, the government just the last 2 years, it's an old story now. But when you bring in the city of Calgary 1 year and the city of Edmonton next year, you're going to have a housing crisis. Right.
Yeah.
And we'd look and we'd see it. We'd see the tenants we'd tour the buildings. And all of a sudden it's a totally different makeup than it was like say 10 years ago or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think with multi, it's still a great asset. It's just a lot, the MLI, at least in the BC context, what I think happened on the Vancouver Island, everyone's trying to avoid the new seismic code.
Okay.
Because that's a game changer for construction costs. And then you have the MLI Select giving out basically free money.
Yeah, it's not free.
It is way too much leverage. Making bad projects work.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that MLS Select project there or financing you talked about? Because I don't know if a lot of the listeners will understand how that works, but I think it's a great point you made. I think it did open up the floodgates for a lot more projects to kind of come to market. Can you maybe explain a little bit just on a high level what that financing looks like or could look like?
For sure. So, I mean, and it's changing as we speak because they've just put in rental achievement, a lot of other... It's going to soften a fair bit. But when the program first came out, and we can talk about the BC and the Alberta context, there's basically you had to get a certain number of points.
Okay.
And once you obtain that certain number of points, they would give you up to 95% of your costs and for construction and takeout. And only you up to 50-year amortization and 1.1 debt coverage. And in a weird, like even if you didn't want that, you're sort of crazy to not take it because they also reduce your CMHC fees. So you paid less fees on your debt. The whole mortgage. So looking at this, the issue, I wouldn't say the issue, if you're the only one doing it, it would be great. But in the BC context, if you were step code 3, you got 100 points because you met the energy efficiency requirements in the first iteration of the program. Now they've added a bit more affordability that you have to meet. So you could basically get your 50-year amortization, 1.1 debt coverage, and, you know, 95% costs on the building you're building anyway, because most municipalities were requiring STEP Code 3. Yeah, the Alberta context, the difference there was the affordability. And this, it more worked on the acquisition side for a lot of people, is that the cutoff, because the percentage of median income, the median income in Alberta is so high. In Calgary, I think it was like, if your units were like 1,775, that was considered affordable. So if you put a certain percentage of affordability, all of a sudden, you know, you're buying a building and the average rent's 1,500, and you realize, well, to be considered affordable, it's got to cap the rents at essentially between that and $200 higher, and they'll give you the same program. So I think what happened with all the cost escalation, like normally in the past when we'd be building, 95% would be great, because when you come out of it, you're debt coveraging at 1.4, 1.5. But with the run-up in costs, you needed the people, a lot of people relying on the 1.1 debt coverage and longer amortization to be able to get their equity out. But the problem is there's absolutely no room for rent to decrease. And it's always kind of concerned us. So we built in buffers.
Okay.
But I think it just allowed a massive amount of projects. So you, like I was telling someone in our office, if you have a house that you is half paid for that you bought 5 years ago, and then all of a sudden it went up 30%, and then you can rezone it for 20 units, they'll basically cut you a check the day you start building.
Equity, wow.
Like because it's, you have your equity already in plus land left. If you only have to put 5% down.
With that said there, that obviously spurs shovels to go in the ground. Do you think that impacted the current multifamily side of the marketplace, where maybe just too much inventory was introduced too fast when not needed? And I don't want to say not needed as if we don't have a housing crisis, because obviously we do, but not needed as in it wasn't that things were leasing up overnight to 100% and then people are going to the next building.
Yeah, and at the start of it, it was definitely, I personally thought the market was going to fall about a year ago, and then all of a sudden it just seemed to keep going on, and you ask why, and it was the immigration targets, or I guess we'd say the lack of with the federal, like, I don't know if Corey for you, but I know so many people who are actually great that have come here recently. And you wonder all of a sudden, why do I know so many Mexican families in Victoria?
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love them to be here. They got in through the same program that everyone else was getting into. And it's, I think the government really underestimated that if you change a requirement to allow someone to come in and just be a student, or, you know, and work unlimited hours and bring their family in, like, people aren't stupid. If they want to come here, they will figure it out pretty quick how to do it. Like, I spoke with one woman, and she's actually my dentist, and she's great. And she was like, they go to auditoriums with 500 people, telling them, you know, this is the way you get into Canada to do it. And she's like, so many of us came in, and like, honestly, a lot of them are like, they're great. It's a great addition to our country. We need it. Natural rate of replacement now, we're pretty much at zero. So we have to rely on immigration. I think it was just, they didn't manage the flows. Everything that was being built was getting leased just because so many people are coming in so fast. And when they kind of turn off that faucet, and we noticed this, it was weird. Like, across the family, we talk all of a sudden in September, we're like, how come it's this slow? Normally September's fast.
Yeah.
Because this is Montreal. They're like, yeah, we're not getting calls. And it literally was the students, just turning back the students. So I think what's gone on now is that the government, they do these projections and the housing needs studies, which are based on a theory of what we're going to be doing nationally for immigration that now is totally outdated. So we did need all the units if we were going to continue doing what we're doing. We're not now. And yes, there definitely is some markets. There's going to be a lot of oversupply for sure.
Now, with your existing holdings, have you seen your vacancy rates of buildings on average go up and your lease rates for, you know, studio ones and twos on average come down? Are you experiencing that right now?
Slightly, yeah. And then the only reason why I say slightly is that I think we're lucky, because most of our buildings we have, especially in BC and Quebec, you have under market rents due to rent control historically.
Yeah.
And the newer stuff we did, when we did one of their last ones in Nanaimo, we did the MLI Flex, which was the precursor of the MLI Select, where you actually had a bit of affordability in there. And we just discounted all the rents on 100% of the building. And they've been, so they're under market. So I think in that way, we're fortunate because we haven't had to push the rents. Our last project in Parksville went really well. We actually rented that out fairly fast, but I think that's just more a testament to like a smaller market that didn't have that much supply coming on, but it has slowed there. But definitely across, it's slowing. Where it's been hit majorly was Calgary. And that was kind of what my wife always calls it, COVID Rob. And I was there in October again, I think we were talking about earlier, before the podcast. And you would think it'd be optimistic. And I left Calgary like a ghost, because I was like, oh my, I've never seen a market turn that fast. And I'm like, this is the fastest growing city in Canada still.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, vacancy rate feels like it's 10% because they released 10,000 units or something in a matter of 4 months, and it just flooded the market. And yes, there are definitely, it was crazy how much they dropped. But there also, everyone spikes their rents up. There's no rent control. So even an older building, you whack up the rents really fast and then they come right back down once the supply comes on. So I think it definitely softened there. And even in Edmonton, before we sold out of Edmonton, I know a lot of people are talking about Edmonton, we saw the signs of it slowing too. Like we were starting to not quite get, and the tenancies we were hearing were the biggest issues is that we're like Montreal slowed a bit too, but more like you're seeing tenants, they know they're not getting renewed. So they're telling you like, look, we're going to be leaving September because we're not getting our non-permanent residency isn't being renewed. So we started seeing a lot of that. And I think it's going to continue. By all indications, next year is going to be the year. I think it's really in a lot of some communities going to soften.
Do you think that changes? Do you think that change in immigration comes back to maybe higher levels there? That could be, you know, a solution for that to kind of, you know, fill back those vacancies. Does the immigration, are you feeling that the immigration has that much impact on our multifamily market right now that single-handedly could be what is causing some of these issues with regards to vacancy? I would say issues, like it's not a balanced market, but higher vacancies than normal.
Yeah, I think where a lot of it, like when we look in, a lot of it is concentrated in the new, like rents got out of control in the newer projects. And I think it's going to really hit people that had to bake in massive profits in their development. Yeah, if they have investors behind there. And the other thing is, it's funny, I was speaking with someone at a, they're basically, you can probably guess who it is, like the second largest private owner apartments in Canada.
Yeah.
They build their own, they're based out of Vancouver Island. And
yeah.
One of the mentions was we kind of need to lead the market down. And I think that's what we have. If we have the space on our buildings, we can, okay, let's not go for the leading edge rents. Let's cut, because if we don't, in 6 months, we might have vacancy and we're going to have to end up dropping the rents anyway.
Yeah.
But what the concern I have is a lot of the institutions, like we would say the really smart guys in the room, right? The pension funds, the institutions.
Yeah.
They've overbuilt these, like a lot in a lot of areas, really high expensive units, and they're sitting on so many vacancy, and the vacancy is really concentrated, but they're continuing to ask the same rents to hope that it comes back, that like you're saying, maybe immigration or it takes a couple years, it comes back, we fill. The question is one day, when do they have to realize that's not coming back and drop the rents? And then that I think will have an impact over the whole market, but it is definitely up until, like, to your point, I was looking at the numbers again, when I was having that little, panic.
Yeah.
So, you know, as much as like Trudeau totally, yes, I think we all agree, messed it up big time. But absolutely, if you look at back in 2015, he's probably looking at long-term projections, or I'd say someone else is, he might not have been paying attention. And we had about 150,000 net natural increase in population per year. Now we're down to pretty much the zero level. So we basically, all our growth is related on how much the feds are willing to accept people and how much people are willing to come here. And when it comes to opening the floodgates, yes, real estate, we all love it. But if you have 8% unemployment in Toronto, don't think it's going to happen. So that's, I'm not like, are we going to depopulate more and push people out that are already living there? Here, that's what they say they're going to do. I'm not sure that will happen. So that might be the part that tempers stuff, that just slows down. And then we hit our 300,000 target, and that just becomes a new kind of growth model, right? But it definitely, it is totally linked to how much people want to come here and how much, we're willing to accept people. And the concern I have with how the federal government whipsawed everything is, it did get out of control. We all know about the fake schools and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, when I speak to the person who's a dentist, she's like, we came here, my friends are here, I can't go home because I'm worried about, dental hygienist, I should say. Like, I can't, she's like, I'm fine because I'm a dental hygienist. My husband isn't. So we have to try and figure it out. We're worried because we're waiting on our paperwork. If we leave the country, we might not get let in because we expire within 6 months. And she was telling me she has friends that this is currently happening to. They can't get back in the country. Wow. And the more, and we're seeing it, like we've had someone, we had an employee in Montreal that told he wasn't going to be renewed. And we're like, well, you're a maintenance tech. That should be fine. And he's like, oh no, but I put this on there. So he changed it to maintenance tech and he was able to stay. And we're seeing this all over. And part of me wonders, how, if we need to attract immigrants, and maybe not for the next few years, we had a huge bump. If we want to continue to attract people to our country, and 20 years ago, when I was in Ottawa, this was the discussion, is all the other countries around the world are aging and they're going to have to start attracting people too. And you have to be the competitive guy in the room to get people. How does it look when you just got people here under a promise, even though the promise there is a loophole, and you boot them out like that?
It
might impact us negatively in the future to try and get some of the people we actually really want.
Is there any markets you guys are excited about? Obviously, like I said, you guys are probably hyper-focused on a few of them, but is there any markets that you guys look at that you're really excited about the future?
For multifamily or industrial?
Well, let's go down asset by asset, because I know the portfolio includes multifamily. Yeah. I know it includes retail, includes industrial. Let's start with multifamily. Is there any markets that you guys are excited about or looking in or looking to maybe expand within on the multifamily side?
I'm not sure right now, just because I think the amount of supply coming on there's so much. And if they do go ahead with the immigration, it might be a waiting game. But I mean, yeah. I think a lot of the markets were in long-term, like Calgary, I go to even though vacancy is high there, I got to give a shout out to Calgary. There's a lot of demand.
Yeah.
And I explained this to someone like I remember like 15 years ago in Parksville, it always had one of the lowest vacancy rates in BC. You have four vacancies. You might not fill them for a while because the absorption was zero, but there's no supply. There's like balanced market where there's absorption zero, and there's a market that keep pumping out supply where there's positive absorption, and the one might feel like it has more vacancy, but it's got more momentum. And I think that's what Calgary, like I'm looking forward to. Like, I think it's going to continue to attract people. The Bridgeline project I'm excited about. And, you know, Vancouver Island, we've talked about that too. Like, it's still a pretty good place to live. Like, we do have to have job growth.
Yeah.
And we do have a problem with way more people dying than being born. So we have to continuously have them. And that's one thing I think a lot of local people don't really analyze is that if you were to take last year in Victoria and you remove, July to July, or however they do it, so the last period that they looked at, and you were to look at the population growth, you remove international immigration and Victoria depopulated by 90 people.
Wow.
So if you think that and you say, well, what if that's going to happen this year? And then you're like, and you get 6,000 or like, you know, 2,000 units come on. The math doesn't compute, right?
Yeah.
That being said, long-term, I think that people are going to move with their feet where they want to locate. And, you know, Vancouver Island is still a pretty good place to live. So most areas we're in, like Montreal, I go to Montreal. I'm never upset when I go to Montreal, aside from the traffic. You won't kill yourself. But I mean, it's vibrant. So I think going forward, like if we are in a slower growth period or we have supply, it's not just going to be, can you buy a piece of land and build it, which was happening. It didn't matter where it's working out. It's going to come down to location again. And we've seen that especially in the larger cities. Like if your location's fine and your price right, you'll rent. There's still demand. But if you're in a B location, you're trying to get A rents or something, it's going to be a struggle.
What about retail? Where are you going for retail? What market are you excited in?
Well, I would be saying Vancouver Island, but the cap rates are too low. It just doesn't make any sense. Like everything we see is crazy. I think retail, if it's the right retail, anywhere almost. That's had population growth for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Because we haven't added retail. So, and you would know more than I would, but the retail square footage, the square foot of retail per capita, even if we might need a little less of it, say with the internet, whatever, it's still way less than it would have been 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
So good. I think retail is a pretty good one there. And same thing with the kind of retail-y type, you know, small bay industrial. That's trading below replacement still in a lot of markets.
That's one thing we talked about quite a bit before we hit record was, you know, you guys were speaking, you guys are obviously building in these markets. And it's like, you know, a comment you made that stuck out to me, and maybe we'll get into this now, was you were talking about Alberta and the construction costs. I believe it was small bay industrial you mentioned there, where the rents you're getting now and what it cost you to build back when you built it made sense. But the rents that the market is dictating now, you couldn't build this in today's costs. So it's well below replacement cost. And that seems to be a common thing everywhere. But let's talk about that. Why Alberta? Obviously, you guys are there. Like it creeps into every conversation, it feels like, now in BC real estate. But tell us why Dinucks and all that stuff ended up in Alberta.
Well, it was 2009, right after the Butterfly. We got a retail strip center there. And it was basically, you're looking at you're in Victoria. And if you want to place capital, Victoria is great. If you want to potentially have increase in growth, who knows? You can't really predict the future, but we looked at Alberta at the time. The cap rates are so much higher because people actually invested there to make money, not necessarily to park money. And so in around 2009-10, we got our first assets out there, and we're like, you know, we don't really need capital appreciation. We get a pretty good leverage IRR. We're below replacement. It works out. And that's kind of what started. And then we kind of went sideways for a while. We didn't really do much for a while. And we just had the one industrial building, and I'd always really wanted to get into it. I can't get my head around Victoria Industrial. I mean, yes, there's newer stuff now, but it's extremely expensive. And
I agree.
I think it's probably overpriced, but all the old stuff, it was functionally obsolete crap, right? Sorry, guys, for the ones who has it in there, but it still served the purpose. It's good. But if you're looking at a nice industrial building and have good loading, that wouldn't be the stuff in Victoria. It's like, you know, you have a mezzanine above a loading door with no yard, that kind of stuff. So we found in Alberta, we, you know, you can get stuff that's actually functional. And you're at the time, you know, over 10 years ago, you're looking at the way the world's going and you're like, well, this asset class might have more legs than other ones, which I think we know now it did. And then fast forward a few years later and, you know, you have your employees telling you, you know, these industrial stuff you guys have, it's like, it's crazy. They're always full and much, and the books just work. So we looked at it and we started acquiring more. And then over time we wanted to, you know, renew the portfolio, and you could get land for, you know, $500K an acre, same thing here on the island. And we're like, you know, if you can build and get this rent, we can actually build instead of trying to buy something that was built 10 years ago and pay a premium and have a really low cap rate. Maybe we'll build what the asset that we can't buy. And that's what we did. And at the time, you know, you're $185 a foot, maybe $200 all in, less than that. And you're getting your rents weren't great, you know, like 13 or something. So you're not getting lift, but you're getting an okay yield going in.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, we're like, we'll do a little on the side and we'll renew the portfolio. And then all of a sudden you start looking around the market and you're like, oh, the old stuff's trading for one, you know, 130, 140 a foot. It costs you 200 to build. So it's below replacement. And then all of a sudden it costs you 280 to build. With the cost inflation we saw, and the old stuff is looking pretty good. So we started buying existing buildings again. We kind of shifted back, and it's, I think, classic real estate. Like, you look at the asset that has demand that you can no longer build because the costs are so high.
Yep.
And either the rents have to inflate or the demand has to drop eventually, right? Or the costs have to drop. And I think what we see now is the rents definitely started to inflate because there's just all the, you know, there just hasn't been any small bay of substance built in a lot of markets just because the construction costs have been too high and the rents were too low for too long.
Yeah.
And now the rents are creeping up.
I think it's one of the biggest challenges you have. And then, like, we talked about the program not too long ago, but Kelowna is an example where land prices in some markets, in some cases, have doubled or tripled over the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And
didn't you hit 2 million, like 2 million an acre or something ridiculous? Oh,
it was unbelievable. I remember looking at something before a long time ago, and it was like 500,000 for like an acre or something like that in West Kelowna. I was like, that's nuts. No one's paying that. And then all of a sudden, you know, double or triple or whatever it came, it ended up there. And then you got construction costs and then financing costs went up and lease rates, you know, didn't move in lockstep and nobody could build anything. And I think that's something that a lot of markets have. And that goes to your point there about buying things below replacement cost values. You can't build these products with today's rents coupled with the cost to build it and acquire the land. So almost like it protects the investment to some degree when you look at it that way.
Totally. And I remember, when we first built our first one on the island, I remember being like, oh my God, I screwed up. We didn't know what we're doing. I just wanted new. And my wife's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, oh, I think I screwed up the zoning. We can't put on what I'm doing. I start freaking out. And then it's funny, well, the conversation, I was like wanting to pull out. And she was like, no, keep it. Now she's like, aren't you happy? I told you to keep it. And I'm like, yeah, because now we have an asset that no one compete with. We have small bay with yard in an area where land's transacting at 2 million an acre. And what happened in Nanaimo was the same thing as you were saying with Kelowna. And I remember speaking with someone, we are getting land. I wish we bought every land we could in this one area, like for 400,000 an acre. And the construction costs hadn't inflated. So you're able to build at a decent cost basis. And so we just look at Calgary, go, well, okay, well, this company, this is what they want in all these major cities that have industrial. The island, we don't have much. Maybe if we build what they want in the other cities, it'll work out here. Small bay with extra storage yard, and the land cost was cheap enough, it worked out. And both projects, they're supposed to be small bay.
Yeah,
one was taken by one of the largest companies in their space. We have no demising walls. It was a single tenant building. The other one we rented to 4 tenants instead of 11. And we were actually removing demising walls out of the plans. Like, it's in, they both were pre-leased before we had the steel up. It was crazy, right? And that rents that I thought were great. Fast forward to having to get an updated appraisal. And these were built, just for the record, one, the first phase of the one was finished in 2020, and the next one was about a year and a half later before the run-ups. Now, fast forward to, I think it was 2023, we had to get an updated appraisal. And the appraisal was like, Robin, like, you'd be like millions underwater building this today.
Wow.
And that's what it would, like, you increase the cost, but it wasn't just the cost. It's that one, I remember there was someone who paid 2 million an acre in that same area for land that we had paid 400K, and it's just the market has gone crazy. And the logic was, they were looking at Kelowna, like you're saying, and all these other markets, and like, well, the projects are working at 2 million acre here, and then this submarket, there's no vacancy, so, you know, might as well work. So all of a sudden land values shot up to 1.5 plus, in freaking Central Island. It was crazy. And then you add on a 30% increase on your costs. And yes, rents, you might have been able to get rents at the peak. I barely made it work, but interest rates also rose in that time. So all of a sudden, just nothing worked.
So what's the future look like for multifamily? What brings us back to where we are? Or do we even get back to where we are?
I don't know. I mean, and you know, this is something that before this last year, I've actually thought a lot about, because we would look, there's short memories, and we all have short memories, like every single one of us. And we didn't really see rent growth happen until the late kind of 2000, started in 2015, 16, 17, 18, but it was really like 2018, 19, where it started to move. And then all of a sudden, you know, post-COVID went crazy. And if you look at it, it's directly, I remember speaking with a guy, Gerald Hartwig, here, and he's like, yeah, it's like the federal government's increasing immigration with no housing strategy. What do you think is going to happen? And it's totally true. It's, we weren't prepared, but like there wasn't coordination between there, like there was later on with the government trying to do all these, you know, housing accelerator funds and everything else, but they should have started that before they're ramping up the influx. So I think it got out of control. But when going back to the 2015 number, I remember that time looking at historical rents and some of the markets were at market rents. And you'd look like there are some areas we were in where I'd find an appraisal on this building from 1990 in the archive. So before we owned it, that maybe was in the due diligence at the time. And the average rent would be like $700. Then you fast forward to 2008 and the average rent was, you know, $850 with not a lot of growth.
Yeah.
And then you fast forward to 2013 and the average rent now is $775. Like there was not a lot of rent growth. That's why it wasn't built.
Yeah.
The rents were just too low. We all know this, like it was below replacement because the rents didn't keep up with the, you know, the overall inflation and the construction costs and values. What happened then in that same property? Now we're renting at $2,000.
Yeah.
So, but that run up from, you know, if you think of from 660 about 800 or 850 when it came over 20 years. And then the run up from 850 to 2000 came in about seven. And I think that's what happens across the country. So the question I have now is going forward, are we going to be sitting there stating, like, depending on what the population growth goes, and it won't be like, it'll depend on the market, depend on the area for sure. But if you look at the aggregate, we might be in an area where our rents barely tick up much more for a really long period of time.
It's a great point. I think a lot of people, I think this is kind of obviously what's happened in the market here over the past, you know, probably better part of 2 years now. Is like this, you know, they drain the swamp, you know, I think that's what Trump says. And then now all these people are exposed because a lot of people would buy real estate with the assumption, oh, it goes up. So you do, you buy real estate, it goes up. But people forget it's a market. They forget it has cycles. And there's also probably been the unfortunate situation of a lot of people, whether it be syndications or developers or whatever it is, that maybe didn't have the same experience as some of the other people in their industry. And then because the market wasn't continuing to ramp up year over year over year, it's now come to a position where they may not know as much as they thought they know. And we're seeing lots of things happening. And I think it's a great point where you talk about the rent, you know, barely goes up a little bit, comes down, and then all of a sudden it had an acceleration point. Everyone continues, thinks those acceleration points are going to continue. And it's a market cycle. And right now you're finding those who really know what they're doing, whether that be development or in the acquisition side of things, are probably okay. And they're probably doing fine. They may not be making the same returns as they once did, but they're not losing money and they're chugging along. And those maybe that had a 10% increase year over year on their performer, whether that be for leases or whether that be for sales on sellable price. It's like those things never worked. They never really ever worked. And there was only a matter of time before it kind of peaked. And in this case, probably pulled off a little bit. So I think it's a great point there. It's a market cycle.
I think the challenge is going to be a lot stickier now for it to go down because so many people's, like so much of this new stuff being built has a really high cost basis. And I think, you know, looking back before we had a lot of the institutions in it and it's more like family offices or whatever, investing in multifamily, a lot of you'd have like grandpa who bought a building and has no debt. And all of a sudden the market softens, he just cuts rent $300. That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
And now there's going to be a lot of resistance because you do that and you're underwater. So I think in a weird way that that's one thing that might be different in the past. There'll be a lot more people really trying to hold on, offer incentives.
Yeah.
But the interesting, going back on that, I remember in 2015 or something, I was speaking with, we can mention a Colliers broker. And they're like, well, yeah, Robin, rents have gone up. You see, CMHC doesn't agree. I'm like, I'm trying to tell them, I'm like, yes, rents are going up because in BC you have rent control and there's so many people that have rents at like $800 at market's 12, but our market rents drop like 15, 20%. I remember at the time thinking, what would happen? So we pulled up a building that in 2008, we were renting at 2,000 to 2,500 in the fall of that year, just before everything kind of hit the fan again. And I'm like, okay, so what was the highest rent in that building in 2013? It wasn't 2,000 to 2,500. It was something like 1,795 and like 1,825. So that was, for me, a bit of a warning sign that, okay, well, what if we built that building new and every rent was at market at 2008 at that peak? Well, you're underwater.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, because we had no new supply, you'd always see the reports where rents continued to increase, especially in rent-controlled market. Alberta, everyone kind of knew it would go up and down. And it sort of left us a little bit like not acknowledging that, no, your rents go up and down, but your market rents, I mean, your rents might on average be increasing, but your market rents fluctuate wildly. And as someone told me years ago, like when you look at a lot of markets, often rents will spike in a really, really short period and then stay flat for a really, really long period. And, you know, we're probably hitting that point. It is like, yeah, it's healthy. Like it couldn't have kept on going up.
No,
when you look at how unaffordable it is, like we have to have wage. I hope the government, this new government, can focus on actually better jobs and wages, because I think it's like we don't necessarily want to deflate the home sector either for people in their homes too much, but we need to have wage inflation catch up to what's gone on in the last few years for sure.
Yeah, I agree. So Robin, obviously you've been in this business for a long time. What does the rest of 2025 look like?
I think just stable. Like people are going to have to really be hands-on with their operations, their management. Like you have to make sure, like that's for us the focus now is, and we're used to that, is that, you know, are your building manager responding to their calls? Are they actually courteous? That's all the simple stuff going on. And us, we're still building. Like we still have a lot of projects, but the areas we're in, I think, are pretty solid. Like they're decent communities. We're just tempering our expectations, and then kind of see what happens on all. There's so much uncertainty, right? Like that's the other thing to start new stuff is just with the tariffs, with the construction costs. It's all over the place, right? Like, so yeah. I think for us, it's mainly continuing what we have. We're really have like the last one we finished is great. We're super pumped about it. You know, the ones we are doing, like the future pipeline, the ones we don't have to do, we definitely put on hold for a while just to wait and see. And not so much not to do anything, but maybe reevaluate what we're going to do. Like, I mean, there could be, you know, a different product that we might want to do or something else. But when it comes to acquisitions, yeah, it's still we're still in the market. It just, I think we have to be really selective and cautious.
Well, Robin, you've been on the program before. You know how we finish this off. We have a lighthearted six-pack of questions we could ask you. Hopefully you can stick around for that to get to know you a little bit more outside of the office.
Sure.
First question up. Unfortunately, you've done something horribly wrong and it's all coming to an end. But before they give you the needle on death row to take it away from you, what's your last meal?
The first thing that comes to my head would be probably albacore tuna poke that we've caught off the coast here, because it doesn't have mercury and it's great. Went tuna fishing last time and it's been great to be able to eat tuna that doesn't have mercury, because a lot of it does, and it's
oh awesome. Wow.
I think I go for it for sure.
Great. Next time I'm on the island, I know who
Pacific
I'm calling.
Pacific Northwest line caught albacore tuna.
Wow. That's I don't think we've ever had pokey, never mind that intense of a description. I'm hungry now. And for the listeners' sake, we record these in the morning before lunchtime. I'm like, there's a pokey place next to where we record these. And I'm thinking, now I know where I'm going for lunch, because now I'm excited for you.
The problem is you're probably going to get red tuna.
Yeah, probably.
Mexico's
yeah.
loaded with mercury.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're probably
like
right.
A mission to get the clean stuff.
No, you're probably right. It's Friday night. You find yourself at a karaoke bar and someone gives you a mic. What song are you singing?
It's going to be really pathetic, and it's just changing because it's top of mind. I'll sing The Weeknd just because I went to his concert this week with my daughter.
How was that? And how was it?
You know what? That's a good question, because I went in 2022 with my daughter and my youngest son.
Okay.
I thought it was awful because he was lip syncing. It was really hot.
Oh, geez.
This last one was amazing.
Wow.
I was just, both my daughter and I was like a totally different concert. She begged me to go. I didn't really want to go. And then I went, good vibe, BC place. I've never seen it. With such good sound. The roof is open. I've never been out with roof. When the roof's open in BC Place,
it's awesome. Yeah.
It's awesome. So I'd probably do a bad version of a song from The Weeknd.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We'll take that. You've been in this business for a long time. Looking back on your career, what is one piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
Don't panic.
Good point.
Yeah.
Something you've purchased for $1,500 or less has had a positive impact on your life as of late.
An electronic group set on sale by Merlin Cycles in the UK for the bicycle.
Good one. Favorite band or musician? And it can be top of mind from this past week if you want.
You know what? I'm going to go with the same one I went last. It's weird that French artist Gims. I actually got to see him at the F, just before the F1 in Montreal.
Okay.
2.5 hours of people singing every word to a song nonstop.
Wow.
It was awesome.
Wow.
He's just got a different vibe. You have to probably, he's outside of North America, he's actually a megastar pretty much.
Okay.
But no one here knows him, but it was awesome.
Last question up. Budget is not an issue. What is the dream vehicle?
One of those hover cars. I think they're trying to come out with them in Japan. I don't even know if they exist. I don't know the name. Those kind of helicopter hover cars, the Jetsons.
Well, I know what I'm doing. If next time I'm on the island, I'm getting your hover car. We're going to go catch some tuna. We're going to make some poke and we're going to listen to The Weeknd. So we've got That'd it all awesome. Sorted out. Robin, how can our listeners find out more about Robin Kelly, Dinux Group, everything you guys are doing over there?
Yeah, just go to our website, www.groupdinux.com. Group is spelt the French way with an E. So it's GroupDinux. And
amazing.
Artists, give us a call.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Robin, for your time today. We really appreciate taking time to educate us on what's happening in the multifamily side of things.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
There you have it. Our interview with Robin Kelly of the Next Group. Love having him on the program. Very insightful and a very easy conversation to have. We recorded that. I want to say it ran about probably 40 to 45 minutes with him, but me and him would chat. We're chatting for probably half an hour before we hit record. One of those guys that you just love to grab a beer with or grab lunch with, pick his brain, hear what he's working on, pick his brain, here's what he's working on. It also feels like they've got a lot of stuff in the pipeline. They kind of have a really, really good trajectory of where they're going. And also the one thing he does talk about there on the program as well is just about not being over-leveraged, because markets are cycles and they do go up and down. And you do find sometimes if you are at an uncomfortable leverage point, and your rents can't maintain themselves or your vacancies do get high, it can be problematic and you may find yourself underwater. It may not be the most comfortable situation to be in. So Robin talked a lot about that, which was great insight as always. I also found the part too where we talked about rents going from like 750, 700, 800 back to 775. A lot of people make the mistake, especially investing in BC real estate, that you just buy it and it goes up. But it is a market cycle. And there is always something out there that could impact it that has nothing to do with the buildings or anything like that. Right now, tariffs are obviously a big thing that we hear a lot about. And the political uncertainty surrounding those things between the countries, that definitely could impact lease rates. It could impact prices, of which have nothing to do directly with the asset itself. But we talk about that and he had a great endpoint on that. And it's really, really good and kind of refreshing to almost hear that, because people have to remember it is a cycle. Real estate in BC, as in most markets, is not supposed to be a get rich quick scheme. But for a lot of years, it felt like that. And if people couldn't almost double their money the next year, they felt it was broken. And that's kind of how it would all kind of play itself out there. So great interview with Robin. Love having you on the program. For those who are looking to do commercial real estate or want to get involved in commercial real estate in some facet, they can reach out to me anytime, corey@williamwright.ca by email. They can visit our website, williamwright.ca, sign up for the latest and greatest news out there. Let us know what they're looking for, and we'll put you in touch with any agent throughout the province. As well as they can call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. And again, we can direct you from there to anyone that can help you. So thanks for listening, guys. Another great episode coming up next week. Take care.
Subscribe today.